All right.
Okay, very good. The May 28th meeting of the Yolo County LAFCO will come to order. And Commissioner Sandin, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America,
and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation,
under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. The staff has put together some notes for me. Because this is the first time that we've had a LAFCO meeting with Zoom, they want to make sure that we stay squared away with the Brown Act. And so with your patience, commissioners, I'm going to read a few things. Today's meeting is being held telephonically and by teleconference pursuant to the governor's executive order number N-2920 issued on March 17th, 2020. The order allows governing bodies of local agencies to hold their meetings electronically, provided that members of the public can also observe and provide public comment electronically. There's some guidelines that I propose today that I hope will allow our meeting to run smoothly. If commissioners have comments about these, please interrupt me and make your comments. So here's what is being proposed. Other than commissioners, all lines will be muted and unmuted by the moderator. And today, Eric May, our counsel, will be the moderator. Commissioners and staff, please state your name each time you're speaking. While we may know each other's voices, the public may not, and some of them are participating by telephone, so they won't be able to see the images. Third, commissioners who wish to speak should notify me in a brief manner. For example, Chair Woods, Bab Sandin here, and I'd like to say something. I'll recognize the person at which time she or he has the floor. Other members, please don't speak until the person who's talking finishes. And lastly, for action items, please make sure to state your name for the record if you're making a motion or a second. All voting will be by roll call, and I'll ask the clerk to help with that. Okay, so now those comments are finished. Does that sound all right to everybody? Okay, I see nodding heads. Terry, would you please read the roll?
Commissioner Sandin.
Here.
Commissioner Sandy.
Here.
Commissioner Saylor.
Here.
Commissioner Stollard.
Here.
Commissioner Wood.
Here. Okay, item number three, public comment. Few little wrinkles here. At this point in the meeting, the commission accepts comments from the public on items that are not on the agenda. And that's what normally we state. And then also items included on our consent calendar, and I'll interrupt the script, Eric, to ask you, is this something new or has that always been the case? And we just were not aware of it, or I was not aware of it.
It might be part of your script. I think if people wanted to offer public comment on an item on the consent agenda, they could do it as part of us considering that or now. And I'll note there are no people in the audience and there are no hands raised to signify anybody wants this.
Very good, thank you. State law limits our ability to respond to comments, and for that reason, we may respond to you briefly or not at all if you're commenting on a matter that's not on the agenda. More importantly, if we are joined by some audience members from the public, for those wishing to make public comments, if you're joining by personal computer, press the raise a hand button. If you're joining by phone only, you'll need to press the *9 to raise your hand. I'll call you either by your name you entered on the phone number or the name you enter, the name that shows up on the screen. Once I call your name, the moderator will unmute the line to allow for your comments. Each public commenter will have 3 minutes to speak. Once the speaker is done, you'll be muted and I will call the next speaker. And note, if the public commenter is joining by personal computer and phone, still use the Zoom raise a hand system, as the star 9 won't work in that case. And I don't believe there are any public comments, but if someone has joined us in the last few minutes, please speak up.
There are no comments.
Okay, thank you. Oath of office number 4. I understand that both Babs Sandine from West Sacramento, the regular member, and Wade Cohen from Winners, the alternate, have already been sworn. And welcome.
We better do it again.
Thanks, Tom.
I withdraw the thought.
Okay. Welcome to LAFCO again.
We do a lot of swearing in public office, you know.
All right. Now we move to the consent calendar. We have items 5, 6, 7, and 8. Is there a motion?
So move approval of the consent.
Don Saylor moves approval. Is there a second?
I'll second. Stallard.
Okay, Tom, thank you. Gentlemen, all in favor? The consent calendar? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions?
Were you supposed to do that by roll call, Chair?
Oh, yes, yes. Thank you. Terry, go ahead, please.
Commissioner Sandine?
Aye.
Commissioner Sandy?
Aye.
Commissioner Saylor?
Aye.
Commissioner Stallard?
Aye.
Commissioner Woods?
Aye.
The motion passes unanimously.
And thanks, Gary, for noticing. Item number 9 is the public hearing. We're the conducting authority for a protest hearing for the Spring Lake Fire Protection District change of organization to change from an independent district to a dependent district to the Yolo to the county of Yolo. Christine?
Hi, good morning. This, you may recall, the Spring Lake Fire Protection District is a independent special district that's located in between the cities of Woodland and Davis and a little bit around the city of Woodland. And they contract all their services out to the city of Woodland, the city of Davis, and UC Davis itself. So they are considered what we call a paper agency. They don't have any staff or department on their own. And over the years, they've struggled to maintain sufficient board members, and we've been having an ongoing conversation for years about that. And so ultimately, they decided to take the step to become a dependent district and fold itself under the Yolo County umbrella. That's the action that the LAFCO board took at our February meeting. And this is just the opportunity for people to protest that action if they choose to. So this is the publicly noticed opportunity for people to protest. We haven't received any protests to date. We didn't receive any protests at the hearing in February, but this is the opportunity. And so assuming we, you know, no one's here to protest again, so the action before you is to adopt this resolution that would go ahead and order that change. And it would become effective July 1. And we have the Board of Supervisors for Yolo County would essentially, the plan is to take the existing Spring Lake board members and basically readopt them as fire commissioners under the Board of Supervisors. So that should transpire before July 1. Any okay. questions?
Very good. Let's open to public hearing. Anyone wish to come forward and address LAFCO? As part of the protest hearing.
There are no members of the public present.
Okay, we'll close the public hearing and questions or comments by commissioners.
For the record, there were no written protests sent in, and I don't have any on the LAFCO email either.
Thank you.
This is Saylor, just to make a comment. This is a pragmatic solution or step in the right direction to help us make sure that this paper district is functional at times when they have a difficulty filling their slots. The Board of Supervisors will be the backup decision-making authority when necessary. And so it's a reasonable step. And the fact that nobody stepped forward probably means very few people know the agency even exists. They've done a good service over the years, and Spring Lake Fire District has had some very good members that have been very responsible and continue to be. And it's a good partnership between the cities of Woodland and Davis fire departments and the unincorporated areas in Yolo County. So I support this and move with approval.
There's been a motion and
a second.
It's been moved and seconded that we adopt resolution 2020-03 ordering the change of organization effective July 1, 2020. Is that an acceptable restatement of your motion?
That's what I meant.
Commissioner Saylor, thank you. And Commissioner Sandin as a seconder, okay? All right. We'll take a roll call vote.
Okay, Commissioner Sandin.
Aye.
Commissioner Sandy.
Aye.
Commissioner Saylor.
Aye.
Commissioner Stollard.
Aye.
Commissioner Woods.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Very good. Thank you. We're on to item number 10, which is consider adoption of the final LAFCO budget for fiscal year 2020-21. Christine?
Good morning again. When LAFCO adopts its draft and final budgets, the law requires that to both occur at public hearings. We discussed our draft budget and adopted it at March 18th meeting. The only thing that's really changed in between is I did receive a memo from all the city managers and the county administrative officer asking LAFCO, among some other JPAs, to reduce its budget by 5%, or to reduce the agency costs by 5%. In order to help with this sudden fiscal crisis created around the COVID-19 situation. And staff sent a memo in response to them after I consulted with the chair, indicating that we would be happy to do our part. And so the budget has shifted slightly. The only adjustment I really made was to take some money out of our professional services budget to get us under their requested 5% reduction in agencies' costs. We actually hit 6%. So that's the final budget that's before you today for approval. I sent this information out to the city managers, and I haven't received any questions or concerns. And I'm available to answer any other questions you might have.
Any questions by the commissioners? Okay, any public comments?
There are no members of the public present.
Okay, is there a motion?
This is Sandy.
Hang on, excuse me. We need to open a public, we have to have a public hearing. So just for the record,
right.
I'm going to open the public hearing. Anyone wish to come forward?
Still no members.
Okay, very good. We'll close the public hearing. And I think someone started to make a motion. Gary, was that you?
It was. Sandy moves approval of the final LAFCO budget for fiscal year 2020-21.
Stallard seconds.
It's been moved and seconded. All, Terry, please read the roll.
Commissioner Sandin.
Aye.
Commissioner Sandy.
Aye.
Commissioner Saylor.
Aye.
Commissioner Stollard.
Aye.
Commissioner Woods.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Very good, thank you. We'll move on to item number 11, consider and adopt an updated Yolo LAFCO fee deposit schedule. Christine?
Good morning. We talked about this at, I believe it was our March meeting as well. I wanted to look at shifting our fee schedule. Some years we have no application proposals come in, and then a few years ago when we were doing all the reclamation districts, we had 6 application proposals going at the same time. And there was quite a fluctuation in the costs for those applications. And we had a conversation about, you know, the way that LAFCO has historically done these is just on a time and materials basis, and it just takes a lot of time, and then staff end up, you know, doing some forensic accounting and end up being budget, you know, fee collectors and stuff at the end of the process, and it's time consuming. And so we talked about going to a flat fee schedule for at least our typical proposals that we schedule. And the commission concurred with that. And so this is basically bringing forward the proposal on how to set a fee, a flat fee structure. And in your packet on attachment B, I listed all the proposals that we've processed since I started here in 2011. And I hope you can see from looking at this that, you know, I didn't do a straight average of the costs because some of the reclamation district applications were, you know, unusually high. And I feel like those are kind of anomalies. So I looked at kind of creating a good baseline, I think, you know, within that framework. So what the fee structure does is it's basically, you know, we have certain types of applications. Some require protest hearings, some don't. So there's an extra charge for protest hearings. There's an extra upcharge if we're dealing with boundary changes because it requires more time to review surveyors' maps, et cetera, and change. It costs us to go to GIS to get new mapping done. So I think this will provide more certainty to applicants about what the costs are actually going to be, which will help out our local agencies quite a bit. So I'm here to answer any questions, but I think the fee schedule is relatively self-explanatory. I guess I should note as well that if there's still a very unusual type of application, you know, a city incorporation or, you know, something that I don't anticipate us doing, that would still be on a deposit, basis. So with that, I will close and be available for any questions you might have.
Questions or comments? Christine, I have one on the chart. Does it show the West Sac Reclamation District?
Yes, Eric. If you scroll to page 2, it's the it's bulleted there. You went too far. The $38,000 fee. It basically that was two applications that you know kind of rolled into one, but that was the cost basically for the West Sac RD900 subsidiary district item that we did. We had outside legal counsel that I think cost, you know, $6,000 as part of that.
Right.
The Lower Elkhorn consolidation is the $12,000 that's right below it.
Okay.
Chair Woods?
Yes, Commissioner Stollard.
And you're trying to standardize this. Does that mean then that the expensive annexation that we just talked about that ended up costing $38,000, would their fee have been much lower if we'd been using a standard rate like $4,000 plus the legal fees?
Correct.
I can't support this. I think, frankly, what we do is too varied. And I think even though it's difficult for staff to have to forensically reconstruct the total cost, it's much more equitable that the individual applications end up being charged what they actually generate costs. That would be my opinion. Unless you can give me a really good reason to feel otherwise, I don't know why that annexation should be reduced to 4,000 while these other little things that we do from time to time ending up paying 4,000. It's like they're subsidizing the expensive and more controversial matter.
Comments from other commissioners?
Hi, this is Commissioner Sandine. I'm mulling over what Commissioner Stollard just said, but I was wondering if we would be looking at this in a regular fashion, like every 5 years or every period of time, so that it's more regularized, I suppose. But I'm thinking about what Commissioner Steller just said.
Well, if I could, Chair Woods, if I could weigh in one more time, it just seems like most of ours are fairly routine, but occasionally something comes along like that particular reorganization, which was controversial and dragged on for quite a long time, many hearings and the like. So I don't know if we really need to, I don't know how big an imposition it is on the staff to be tailoring the fees to the actual costs generated. If it really is a major problem, I could reconsider, but it seems like some of these things are just plain procedural matters that go through very quickly. But when there's any conflict at all, they tend to drag on for some time. So I don't know. I need to hear what my fellow commissioners think, if you feel this is the right thing or not. I guess I could reconsider, but $38,000 is a whole lot more than $4,000.
Well, this is Saylor. May I comment?
Please.
So there may be exceptions of the sort that we're pointing out and talking about at this point with that one high cost item, and there may be a way to include in the fee structure that there'd be some separate consideration for protracted processes or something. But I think that the general idea of having a fee structure that's clear and predictable, that's uniform and documented, is a benefit to all parties concerned. It's a process that we have, all of our cities and our county have this kind of a fee structure in place that we do, as Babs mentioned, consider. We actually consider it annually based on changing costs at the county. But I don't know that we'd need to do that at LAFCO, but I think this is an improvement in streamlining and making uniform and consistent and standard our process. But I do think that there may be some circumstances where the actual costs need to be incorporated in some manner. So I think Tom's point, if I understand it, is accurate, that I agree with the point of not giving that all of that effort for a protracted process at a lower cost. We need to recapture our costs, and my sense is that this fee structure that our executive officer is proposing would apply to most circumstances that we experience on an annual basis, and so I support it with the idea that maybe there's a way to capture these excessive cost items. And maybe Christine has a comment about how that might be incorporated in the structure.
This is Commissioner Tendine. I have one idea to follow up on that. It seems like there could be a basic cost that takes into consideration a certain amount of time and effort expended. And then if it hits that ceiling or whatever, however we describe it, then there could be additional costs. So that there may be a way to describe what this covers to a certain level, and then there could be an additional cost if it goes beyond that. Because that seems completely reasonable, that this is what I expect. But if it's something, as Commissioner Saylor said, something complicated, and Commissioner Steller as well said this, then there can be additional charges. Hmm.
Commissioner Sandin, before Christine, I asked Christine to respond. Commissioner Sandy, do you have any observations?
No, I'm in agreement with what seems to be the emerging consensus of the commission that standardized, clear fee assessment is in the best interest of the organization and the public, but that there are times when we encounter extraordinary projects. I would view this project as extraordinary, given the fact that it required that we went to a protest hearing and a counting the ballots and a number of other things that probably did drive up agency costs.
Christine, thank you. Christine, any response?
Well, I think first and foremost, I hear and I appreciate the comments that are being made. I don't think there's a so-called right answer in any of this. I think it's just a different way of looking at it. I guess the one observation that I would offer is that, you know, you take the kind of the extreme application of the RD 900 subsidiary district that cost $38,000, and that, you know, largely paid for staff time, which the city of West Sac already contributes to. So, you know, in some way, I mean, I saying that you're double charging someone is a little bit strong, but, you know, we do not use application fees for our budgeting. Because some, like I said, some years we get no applications, some years we get six. So this isn't revenue that we rely on. And when the agencies are already contributing to paying our salaries, I just think it's an interesting philosophical question on whether then you charge them again for an application process that they've already paid the staff time for. Obviously, when we talk about outside legal counsel or outside charges, we definitely charge applicants for that, and that's still set up in the fee structure. But I mean, that's all that I would offer, and that was my thinking that went behind this proposal. But I think it's also a very valid point to just say, look, let's just pay actual costs and keep doing it that way. And that's perfectly fine, and staff can keep doing that.
Chair Woods?
Yes. Commissioner Stoller?
You know, I think I'll go with the group on this, you know, because it's these numbers aren't huge, but some of our groups are very poorly funded. They have very little money. And so what I was responding to was the thought that somebody who could get their work done for about $2,000 worth of our time ended up paying $4,000 to subsidize the big fight in other matters. And so, you know, if you're the Knights Landing Cemetery District, you know, $4,000 is a big number, or any of our fire districts. So I would like to see that application fee be as low as possible, because of the vast majority of our districts are actually pretty small. And that's really what I was responding to. I don't see why these very poor, generally impoverished small districts should be subsidizing any kind of major fight among other bigger players. So, you know, that's really what generated my feedback. But, you know, if the consensus of the group is you want to stay with a fee schedule and variations, that's a mid position that I could go along with.
Okay. Well, Tom, I think you make a good point. I'm just, I also understand what the staff is trying to do.
Yeah.
In reduce their workload, and when we don't have a large staff. I'm just wondering, Christine, if there's a way to minimize the amount of accounting work that goes into this. Maybe there isn't. If you turn it over to the county, I was thinking you could draw on the county's resources, but then we probably pick up a big bill from the county for that approach, correct?
Well, you're basically talking about, I don't see how the county would help. Basically, it's just a matter of, you know, tracking our time and generating invoices. The county was supposed to roll out with their new financial system some better time tracking software that was supposed to make this a little bit easier, but that's never panned out for a whole host of reasons that I'm not going to get into. But it's not an inordinate problem. I'm not trying to make this a big problem. We just hadn't, you know, updated our fee schedule in a long time, and I just thought there might be a more streamlined way to go about it. It's not the end of the world either way by any stretch of the imagination. And but what I would do if the will of the commission is to stay with kind of an actual cost scenario, I'll probably just go back and bring back some deposit schedule that just has a higher upfront deposit, because the deposits are too low generally now. And so we're perpetually in a situation of having to go back and collect extra money. And you know, they're just older deposits and they don't reflect some of the changes in the way the applications are processed. So,
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Commissioners Saylor.
I am interested in having a standard fee structure that we have in place that everyone can see, so it's all completely transparent, and reviewing it on a periodic basis to be sure that it is in fact tied to actual costs. Fine with me to have some kind of variance for excessive costs, or even some kind of appeal if somebody has a hardship in achieving the funding required. But I do not think that it's a good idea to leave it unstated and have an hourly rate or something. I think we get into just too much messiness. And I never have seen a situation where having an established fee schedule is a bad idea. I think it's a very good idea. And so that's, I'm happy to have this come back with some tweaks based on the conversation today, or to adopt it as it is today and have something else modify it in some way. But I do support a standard fee structure that everybody can look at and know what's up.
Okay. Any other comments?
So I make a motion that we approve the fee structure that's presented to us, and ask that Christine reflect on the comments that were made in this meeting and bring back any suggestions she has for exceptions or appeals.
We open and close the public hearing already.
I don't think we have a public hearing on this, do we?
It is agendized as a public hearing.
Oh, all right. We better take care of that.
Sounds like a good idea.
We'll open the public hearing.
There are no commenters.
All right, close the public hearing. There's a motion that we go forward with the basic recommendation by the staff with the executive officer coming back at our July meeting with some tweaks.
Chair Woods, can I make a quick comment on that? I just want to note that the fee schedule as it's presented already has a process for a waiver or an exception process, okay, so that if there was a lower income district who needed to seek a fee reduction, there's a process there for them to do so.
Well, in that case, I would remove that last caveat and just ask that the board approve the structure before us.
All right, is there a second?
I will second it.
All right, there's a motion and a second. Further discussion? Okay, I have a question, comment. How does this deal with the exceptional situations? Now in West Sacramento, they covered the reclamation district issue there. They covered the extraordinary costs. So really, LAFCO didn't suffer from that. What about the others? What about the Lower Elkhorn dissolution, annexation and dissolution? $12,000. Did we bear that burden?
No, the Lower Elkhorn districts paid that fee.
All right.
I mean, I think the crux of the issue for me that I see is, you know, was the $38,000 or the $12,000 a cost to LAFCO? Because the agencies already pay my staff time So that, you know, was there, and, you know, you're asking the applicant to cover staff time, which is already paid for. So I guess I'm, you know, is it a true cost, I guess? Obviously outside consultants that LAFCO is sending, you know, money to is a different situation, and those costs are covered explicitly.
And under the proposal that the staff is recommending, that would continue to be the case?
Yes.
I could offer the legal perspective to it. So the staff time that is used towards a project is a cost to LAFCO. And the way I view it is, sure, for this year's budget, it's already been paid for in a sense, but if that $38,000 were to come in from the applicant, that's $38,000 for next year that the member agencies don't have to pay. So who generated the burden would pay for that burden, but Davis, Winters, you know, other areas wouldn't have to pay for it in the subsequent year.
Chair Woods?
Yes, Commissioner Stollard, and the previous speaker was Eric May.
I just want to mention that the entire planning operation for the city of Woodland is fee paid for. We don't budget for it other than to offset the revenues derived. And when we don't have the revenues, we reduce staff. That's how we operate the whole planning function in the city. And I see Babs nodding. I suspect it's the same for other cities as well. I do not know why LAFCO should be a subsidized operation. Perhaps it's time that we felt that the costs were supported by those who are receiving the service and not necessarily be funded by the jurisdictions. So it's just something to think about, maybe act on.
Well, if I could comment on that, I would just offer that, you know, a planning department operation in a city is somewhat different than LAFCO. I mean, there are years where we have no applications come in. So, but there is still a lot of LAFCO work that occurs with municipal service reviews and other sorts of things. So, and there is a requirement in state law that the cities and counties subsidize LAFCO's budget. So it's set up a little bit differently than a planning operation where I agree you do tend to see those be, you know, fee-driven departments.
I think Mr. Chair, if I may proceed.
Yes, Commissioner Stollard.
Stollard, I do think what Eric said, you know, if we were collecting money as we go, we would naturally want to maintain a reserve to deal with the situation that Christine just stated. But I think we need to realize that we're now entering a period of severe financial stress in every public agency. And, you know, we're going to have to be looking for money just about everywhere. Everything's on the table. So, I mean, we're talking, you know, freezing hiring, leaving positions vacant, and ultimately layoffs in our city. So I just think, you know, this is our financial reality. It seems to come around fairly regularly, either some kind of recession or some kind of problem. So I just think it's something we all need to be keeping in the back of our mind. How can we develop sufficient financial cushion for LAFCO? I mean, it'll need to have reserves from year to year, just as our jurisdictions do. But hopefully that those who are receiving services of whatever kind, required by law or not, are actually paying for them.
Any further comment before we vote? All right. We have a motion and a second. All in favor? Hang on.
Could we just reiterate change a little
bit? Eric?
Could we reiterate the motion just so it's clear for the record? Just approval of the staff recommendation?
The motion, as I understand it, Commissioner Saylor, is to approve the staff recommendation.
Yes.
Without any caveats. And the seconder was Commissioner Sandin?
Sandy.
Sorry, Sandy. Are you agreeable to that restatement?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Please call the roll.
Commissioner Sandin? Aye. Commissioner Sandy?
Aye.
Commissioner Saylor?
Aye.
Commissioner Stollard?
I think I'll just soon be reflecting a no on this one. Thank you.
Commissioner Woods.
Aye.
With a vote of 4-1 with Stollard a no, the motion passes.
Very good. And thank you, Tom, for bringing out those issues.
And I'm not upset about this or anything. It's just, I think we need to be very thoughtful about how we finance ourselves and how much we charge people. So, and I think everybody feels that way.
I agree. It's understood. Thank you. All right. We'll move on now to the regular agenda. Item number 12 is to elect a chair and a vice chair for the commission to serve 1-year terms starting May 28th, ending May 1st, 2021. Any comments, Christine?
No. This is something we do every year.
All right. Let's start with the chair then. Commissioners, what is your pleasure?
Mr. Sandy, I think you're doing an exceptional job, Chair Woods, and so I would like to renominate you to continue service in the role.
All right. Thank you for your comments. Is there anyone else who'd like to make a nomination?
As you reflect, Chairman, this is a bloodbath every year, and so I do what we can.
All right.
Aye.
Is there a second to the nomination?
Taylor, second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded that Woods continue for another year. All in favor? Or please read the roll.
Commissioner Sandine.
Aye.
Commissioner Sandy.
Aye.
Commissioner Saylor.
Aye.
Commissioner Stollard.
Aye.
Commissioner Woods.
In order to avoid a bloodbath, aye.
Motion passes unanimously for the chair.
And this is Eric May. Just for the record, there was not a flurry of commenters opposing the nomination.
Very good. The floor is open now for a nomination for vice chair.
Stollard nominates Sandine.
Sandy seconds.
All right. Is there anyone else who would like to throw their name in? All right.
Throw being the operative word.
Right.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor, or please read the roll.
Commissioner Sandine.
I guess it's an aye.
Commissioner Sandy.
Given Commissioner Sandine's reluctance to rethink her position, I'll go with aye.
Commissioner Saylor.
Aye.
Commissioner Stollard.
Aye.
Commissioner Woods.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously for Sandine as vice chair.
All right. Commissioner Saylor, thank you for your assistance and service over the last three years. I've enjoyed consulting with you on a number of occasions, and most recently in the month of April, when we met with the executive officer and with the representative from the special districts. You did not attend that meeting with the special district rep, but we had a pre-meeting, and it was extremely helpful to have you participate in that. So I will miss your counsel, and acknowledge your efforts, special efforts over the last 3 years. Thanks again.
I would like to include those comments in my eulogy, if you would like. Thank you all. I'm so proud of this commission, and can look forward to continuing to serve with you all.
Great. Glad to hear that. Thank you. Okay. Now we move to item number 13, which is to select an ad hoc legislative subcommittee member to replace former city member Will Arnold. Christine, any comments?
Yeah, just briefly, we do have a ad hoc legislative subcommittee, and what this committee does is basically help. Occasionally from CalAFCO, we get requests to take positions on certain legislation going through the state process. And so the committee works with me to review and take a position and send a letter to our representatives, pro or con a certain legislative action. I will say this year, the legislation is all pretty subdued with all the COVID pandemic issues going on. And so I don't know how active it's going to be, but this isn't required, but when the commission talked about setting up this committee, there was a conversation about how it was useful to have one county member and one city member to kind of balance the views on the committee. And so we are losing Will Arnold from that committee right now. The other committee member is Commissioner Saylor.
I also want to state that I believe it does not have to be a regular member. It can be a alternate city member also.
Very good. Thank you for those comments. If we follow tradition, it would then fall to Commissioner Stollard or Commissioner Sandin to sit on that committee, or possibly alternate Commissioner Cowan. So any self-nominations, any nominations by other members?
I'd like to nominate Commissioner Stollard for this role.
I would like to nominate you.
I'm returning the favor, Tom.
How about we both nominate Wade? I'm not helping, I'm sure. I'll accept the responsibility if the commission would like me to do so.
All right. Is there a second for that?
Sandy seconds.
All right. Any others? Any other nominations? All right, then. Let's have a roll call.
Commissioner Sandin.
Aye.
Commissioner Sandy.
Aye.
Commissioner Saylor.
Aye.
Commissioner Stollard.
Aye.
Commissioner Woods.
Aye.
Motion passes right. Unanimously.
Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome.
It's not that bad, I promise.
Nothing is. It's...
All right, we're on to item number 14, report by the executive officer.
Hello, just two quick things I thought that would be worth bringing up. First of all, the word I'm getting from Yolo County is that the county admin building is supposed to be opening back up to the public next week.
Yay.
So since we are housed in that building, we're gonna slowly transition to the reopening process, although staff are still encouraged to work from home if possible. So I may have some part-time hours in the office. We'll see how things go, but just want to let you know on that. We have the long-range meeting calendars included in your packet. We are looking to cancel our meeting in June and hold a meeting in July. So that is the plan. And I did just want to note that I want to acknowledge that we have a caseload of municipal service reviews that are meant to be done this fiscal year. And things are, I just want to note and highlight that things are definitely kind of falling behind with our municipal service reviews, especially as it relates to the community services districts. Part, I think, because of the pandemic and the shutdown, and it's hard to get traction and engage people right now. But I think the other part is just the positive in doing our municipal service review is that we uncovered that Knights Landing Community Services District is having some significant issues, which is a good thing to uncover, but it is taking a lot of time on our part to sort of intervene and help right the ship there. So things have gotten a little bit more bogged down than I would have liked in that way. So I just want to acknowledge that. But we are hoping to bring some of our MSRs forward in July, and then we might have some trickle in at our September meeting as well. So that's all I have, unless you have any questions of me. Thanks.
Okay, questions or comments for Christine? Christine, I just note or ask the question with the at the CalAFCO level with the pending departure of the current executive officer. Is there any recruitment going on at the present time?
Yes, there is a recruitment process going on right now to replace the executive director of CalAFCO. I know they, I think they got 9 applications in their recruitment process, but Pamela Miller has also offered to extend her time a little bit longer because she just, I think everyone acknowledges that during this pandemic, it's probably not a good time to have turnover in the executive director position right now. So she's willing to stay a little bit longer. And I think she's negotiating with the CalAFCO board on that. So I don't have a set, she hasn't announced, you know, what she's willing to do. I think she's still negotiating that right now. But the recruitment process is going on simultaneously. So I think the board is going to decide what they're going to do with that position. But yes, it's going on.
Okay. Yeah, she'll be a big loss. The other question that I had or comment was the CalAFCO conference in the fall. It looks like at least at this point, they're still planning on having an in-person session.
Yeah, right now I'm you know, for those of you who don't know, I'm the Central Region CalAFCO staff volunteer rep that kind of helps CalAFCO, and my task this year is to chair the planning committee for the conference and the sessions. And it's true that as for now, we're contractually obligated to hold a conference in person until the governor comes out with more specific orders limiting gathering to certain numbers. So at this point, we're planning a conference. I think, you know, it's a distinct possibility that we won't be able to hold the conference because there'll be some gathering limit of 100 people or something like that. And at which case, hopefully we'll take those sessions and turn it into some sort of an online offering. But that's what the planning meetings are ongoing, and we are developing sessions as we speak. So that's the plan for the conference.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. With that, if there are no further questions for Christine, we'll move on to item 15, Commissioner Reports. And we'll start on my far left with Gary Sand, Commissioner Sandy. Any comments, Gary?
Very good. None.
All right. And then on my immediate new left will be Tom Stollard. Tom, you'll move over. I think the way we've done this is try to, since the days of Commissioner Davies from the City of Woodland, we always have the more senior city member to the left of the chair. And
I don't know. I don't think I've got more white hair than you do, but I'm working on it.
I had a lot more white hair before Sunday when my wife cut my hair.
She did a good job. Thank her.
Yeah, I'm thinking of leaving my barber. But at any rate, no comments, Tom?
Yeah, a couple. First of all, I actually think the Zoom format works really well. I'd love it if in the future the governor gave us some discretion to have some meetings by Zoom and some in person. Obviously, we wouldn't want to see official bodies, you know, structuring their meetings so that the electronic meetings were the controversial ones or anything like that. But these are very efficient, being able to see all your faces on the screen at the same time. You know, I immediately can see how you're responding to things as you can see how I'm responding. I just think it's a pretty efficient thing, and it saves trips, driving trips and all that. SACOG, by the way, has an initiative, as Don can attest, to encourage people to maintain distance telecommuting and things of that sort after all of the restrictions are lifted. I think for some of our meetings, that would be a nice opportunity for us too. But that aside from all that, I wanted to express my deep appreciation to Christine. She's been helping the Woodland 2x3x2, which is a group of city council people, school district people, community college people, and the Yolo County Office of Education. And the topic of broadband has come up, and you know, everybody wants more broadband, but they haven't been in the weeds. And thankfully, Christine has helped us with some very useful information so that, you know, we at least can focus a little more and hopefully find a place where we can be more useful. I just will mention that we have initiated a letter to Assemblymember Curry, who has actually been a champion in this effort, as many of you know, to see if we can't get more statewide initiative on this issue. And I'm happy the governor's mentioned it too. Lately, we've all certainly seen with distance education occurring for our children, the importance of broadband and internet access. But again, it's not a single issue. The hardware is one thing, and then the financial cost is another thing for people who need it. If you didn't know it, Woodland has put out 2,500 of these hotspot things for kids that don't have internet at home so that they can effectively use their Chromebooks, which has been issued to every one of the 10,000 Woodland students. I think it was a pretty phenomenal effort by the educational community and a wonderful way to respond. And I think, frankly, going forward, they too ought to think about some distance learning as a regular part of how they operate our schools. That's my comment. But Christine, bless your heart. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Tom. Commissioner Saylor.
Not much. I would like to just amplify Tom's comment about the utility of the remote meetings. And there's another aspect, Tom, that I think is worth mentioning, and that's the accessibility by the public to the meetings that we are conducting on through Zoom is actually quite enhanced from when they pick a meeting and a drive in. And, you know, we have, of course, countywide, we have people from Clarksburg and Dunnigan and us, you know, far reach it. So it's a big issue, a big effort to transport themselves for a 3-minute comment, and they can participate through Zoom. So even if we don't meet through Zoom, I think we've learned some lessons, and there may be some ways that we can encourage more public participation through these technologies than we had earlier understood was possible. So I think we learn from these things, and let's see what we can do to make things better as a result. So I agree.
Thank you, Don. Commissioner Sandine.
Just wanted to say thanks. I'm happy to join the commission as a regular member, and thanks for having the confidence in me to serve as your vice chair.
Well, it's nice to have you join us, Commissioner, and thank you for standing in the number of times you did while you were the alternate. It's very much appreciated. I do have one comment that I'd like to make, and that's make the commissioners aware in a little more detail of the meeting that Commissioner Saylor and the executive officer and I had with respect to this, to a request by the statewide special district, I guess, Executive Officer Christine, for the statewide special districts organization. She the executive officer?
No, she's she's the regional rep for Yolo and some other counties from the California Special Districts Association.
This meeting came about originally going back to the Little Hoover Commission several years ago. And their concerns about LAFCO's role. And they started out the process, I don't know how it originally came about, but they really put the LAFCO under the microscope and did not have a very positive idea of LAFCO's role. And so the executive director of CalAFCO met with them and really turned them around so that they've become an advocate for LAFCOs. But in the process, they wanted LAFCOs to consider expanding membership where special districts were not already included on LAFCO. to include two special district members. Now, in some larger jurisdictions, it's quite common for special districts to be on LAFCOs. In the smaller districts, not so much. But the press was fairly intense to include this, include special districts. And so I know Christine had to deal with this at the Cal-AFCO level and also with the special districts. So there was a meeting set up in April, and prior to that meeting, Commissioner Saylor and I met with Christine and had a preliminary session. And as a result of that, Commissioner Saylor and I wanted the commission to be aware of this meeting and of the direction that we took on the commission's behalf. And so if anyone objects to the direction that we left with Cal-AFCO and with the special districts group, please speak up. But we felt fairly strongly that that would not be a good idea for Yolo LAFCO. And here were the reasons why, and I'll use Don's words here. Basically, in our case, Don and I both saw it as a solution in search of a problem. We didn't really see a great need for that here. And no districts have asked to join LAFCO. There has been some minor discussion of that around the edges over the years, but no district has really put forward a proposal to join LAFCO. In Merced County, where there was actually fairly strong support for special districts joining LAFCO, when they actually got serious about it and talked to districts about it, the districts really didn't want to go forward with it. They didn't want to pay the fees, and they really didn't see much advantage to it for them. Let's see, I'm having a hard time reading my scratch. It seemed in the counties which did support special districts on LAFCO, it seemed that there was a common theme, which is that basically there were districts which, or LAFCOs, which had a fair amount of contention, and that the seating of special districts actually helped to balance things out, make it a little more objective. We didn't see that as a problem in Yolo County. And where in both of our experience, through the MSR process and other processes that directly involve the districts, the commissioners have taken an objective, balanced approach. And so for those reasons, we let the special district representative know that we were not interested at this time, that possibly in the future it could be something that could be looked at, but not at this time. So at any rate, that's kind of a long explanation, but I thought it deserved some discussion here to make you aware of what we said on your behalf. And if we're wrong on that, please speak up. I'd appreciate your comments.
Stallard, you are right on that.
Okay. Any other comments? I see Commissioner Sandin nodding. Commissioner Sandy, any comments? Okay. All right. Very good. That's all that I had. And unless there's anything else that we need to discuss, we are adjourned. Thank you very much.
LAFCO.